You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Look like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
You are listening to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features conversations with and the music of local musicians and traveling musicians performing in town. I'm your host, Dave Lake.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with conductor Benjamin Manis. Maestro Manis will be the guest conductor of the Savannah Philharmonic on Saturday night, March 28th at 7:30 p.m. in a concert entitled Music of Empire, Elgar's Enigma. This concert is a collaboration between the Savannah Music Festival and the Savannah Philharmonic and features Carlos Simon's Wake Up Concerto for Orchestra, Edward Elgar's Enigma Variations, Opus 36, and Rafe Vaughan Williams' Flows Compi. This last work features Philip Duke's viola and the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Benjamin Manis.
Thanks, Dave. Very happy to be here with you.
So let's get to know Ben Manis. Tell me your musical journey.
Well, I should say I'm a cellist, but is my instrument. I grew up in Chicago. I was playing in the local youth orchestra here, which is excellent, the Chicago Youth Symphony. And so I had sort of a very robust musical upbringing here with chamber music and orchestra and all of that. I was interested in conducting from a very young age. I was the kid who would bring the score to the Chicago Symphony performance and sit there in the audience looking at the music of whatever they were playing. Then I studied cello in my undergrad. At the time, I wasn't sure that I wanted to be a conductor. I thought I wanted to play in a string quartet. That was sort of the dream. But as I went through my 4 years of college studying cello, I became more and more interested in conducting. Then I wound up going to grad school for conducting. It's very difficult, especially in the States. Almost nobody goes to school for conducting as an undergraduate. You have to basically play an instrument first. And then from there, after graduate school, I got a job at the local opera house where I was. I went to Rice University in Houston. And then I got a job at the Houston Grand Opera, which is a fabulous organization. I actually just got back from there 2 days ago from conducting a production at Houston Grand Opera. So I was there for a couple years, during which time there was a pandemic. And then I was in Utah with the Utah Symphony for 1 year. And since then, I've just sort of doing this freelance guest conductor thing, which is now what I'm doing. And I'm talking to you from my home here in Chicago.
And so where did you go to undergraduate school to study cello?
I went to the Colburn School in Los Angeles.
But you grew up in Chicago.
Grew up in Chicago, went to LA for school and then Houston for more school.
And so what attracted you to the Colburn School?
A lot. I mean, it's a great school. It has a lot going for it. First of all, it's free, which is always attractive. It's free for all its students, room and board included. It's very small. It's very selective. This was true when I was there, and I believe it still is true. The whole school is the size of one symphony orchestra, and that includes mostly graduate students. So there's not many undergrads. I think my class had 9 students in it, I mean, across all instruments. So it was a very, very high level place. And most importantly was the teacher. And I studied there with Ronald Leonard, who was the former principal cello of the Los Angeles Philharmonic for many, many years. Incredible teacher, pedagogue. And so even though I did not wind up becoming a professional cellist, I still feel like I got an enormous amount out of that experience.
And then you went directly on to graduate school to study conducting.
I went directly on, that's right. While I was still in my undergrad, I was starting to conduct. I mean, the hardest thing about trying to start conducting, no matter when you try to do it, is finding people to conduct. You need other people. You know, anybody can start practicing the piano, and you get a piano, and if you work hard enough over a period of years, you'll get better at playing the piano. But you can't really practice conducting without other people. And so I started the same way most of my conductor friends have started, which is you sort of, you're in school, you have this community of musicians around you. You tell everybody, all right, I'm going to put this thing together next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Show up. I'm going to conduct for an hour. Then I'm going to order Domino's and have beer for everyone. And, people come for the free food. And so that was how I started. It was a conducting Appalachian Spring, the original version, which only calls for 13 players, which makes it a very attractive thing for a young conductor to do because you only need 13 people. So I got started with that. And then, I mean, I was very, very fortunate. My conducting teacher at Rice is a man named Larry Ratcliffe, who was really a legend of conducting, of education, music education here in the States. Fortunately, passed away a couple of years ago, but had just an unbelievable impact on me and on really generations of students who came through there and now play in orchestras all over the world. So I was very fortunate to study with him. It was a very intense experience studying with him, but I got so much out of it and really prepared me to leave school and try to do this professionally.
Now, those folks that aren't really into opera, I don't think realize how cutting edge the Houston Grand Opera is in terms of new music, as well as incorporating the classics, incorporating new music into this. And you were involved in several productions of new music.
I mean, HGO has a very, very strong history and legacy of commissioning new operas, premiering new operas, championing living composers. So I was involved in a number of world premieres there. A piece called Marion's Song about the life of Marian Anderson, a piece called Snowy Day, which is a sort of an operatic adaptation of the famous children's book. And actually, I mentioned I just got back from Houston, where I was conducting a production of Mice and Men, which is the great masterpiece of the American composer Carlisle Floyd, who had a long relationship with Houston Grand Opera, had several of his pieces premiered there. He just passed away a couple years ago, but this year would have been his 100th birthday. So as part of that celebration, HGO was doing, I believe, a couple of his pieces. And I was fortunate to be back there to conduct Mice and Men, which is just an amazing opera that ought to be played everywhere.
So that puts you in a very interesting position when you're doing something like, for instance, Joelle Thompson's A Snowy Day.
He's one of the best. I think he's one of the best composers around. I am looking forward. I don't know what he's going to write next. I hope he'll write a major opera. Snowy Day is a wonderful piece, but it's a chamber opera for a smaller ensemble. It's pretty short, but he's got a lot of great music in him, I'm sure.
Well, and you also mentioned that you did the world premiere of Marion's Song, and that's, of course,
Yes.
Damien Sneyd, and with
Yes.
libretto by Deborah Dipmouton. These are works of today by living composers, but they're also works by Black composers and librettists.
That's right. Certainly, it made sense to have an opera about Marian Anderson with a Black composer and a Black librettist, and Snowy Day as well. One of the things HGO does so well, I have to say, is amplifying the extremely diverse population community that they have in Houston. And so I know it's always on their mind, and it's always on my mind also, that we can elevate these wonderful composers. I mean, Deborah is just an amazing poet. We're really, honestly, we're fortunate that she has done this work in the classical music world, in the opera world, and the songs, as you mentioned, because she's such a powerful, creative person as a poet. So yeah, always important.
This says something, I think, about you in terms of your interest in new music.
Yeah, I mean it's a very strong interest, and I mean you can see part of it on this program that I'm about to come to Savannah this week to conduct, where we're doing Carlos Simon's Concerto for Orchestra. It's called Wake Up. I mean, Carlos is a composer that I've done a number of his pieces. I think his music is, first of all, extremely well written for the orchestra. He calls it a concerto for orchestra, so it really showcases various aspects of the orchestra, different sections, individual players. I think it's also a great showcase for him as a composer, because as you listen to the piece, you hear the influence of so much different music, so many different varieties that really inform his music, from classical, African American spirituals, and Carlos, I should say, is black. Non-classical music, there's some sort of jazz and hip hop influence in there. It's just amazing. And I will say also, I think it's wonderful. More and more people are including music by people who are not dead white guys. That's great. But I think too often it's sort of a lip service of, okay, well, we'll play a 5-minute piece by a living black composer before we play our standard Mozart and Tchaikovsky. And so whenever possible, I try to do more than that. So I'm very happy to play Carlos's piece, which is a very, I mean, significant piece. It's at least 20 minutes long, I would say. It's a substantial work. It's not just sort of an appetizer for the program. So I'm very excited to bring it to Savannah.
Thank you. Thank you. This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with Global Soul.
The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the 2026 Savannah Music Festival, which runs from March 25th through April 5th. Classical programming will feature Jonathan Momora, Escher String Quartet, Maxim Landau, Sebastian Naur, Philip Dukes and Friends, and more. More information about concerts and tickets can be found at www.savannahmusicfestival.org. The Savannah Philharmonic's Music of Empire Elgar's Enigma concert with the guest conductor Benjamin Manis is on Saturday, March 28th at 7:30 p.m. in the Lucas Theater for the Arts and features, in addition to Elgar's Enigma Variations, the violist Philip Dukes performing Vaughan Williams' Flos Campi with the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus. More information and tickets are available at savannahphilharmonic.org. Contemporary Classics features weekly conversations with and the music of nationally and internationally known contemporary art music, musicians, and composers. Join me, Dave Lake, your Contemporary Classics host, and these musical guests each week on Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. on WRUU. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lick.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with conductor Benjamin Manis. Maestro Manis will be the guest conductor of the Savannah Philharmonic on Saturday night, March 28th at 7:30 p.m. in a concert entitled Music of Empire, Elgar's Enigma. And this program coming up is not just Carlos Simon's work, a living, breathing Black composer, but also Ralph Vaughan Williams' Flos Campi. It's not one of your more commonly done works.
I would say not, yes.
And so that's going to be very unusual to the listeners.
Yes.
And to boot, I'm not going to say performances of Elgar's Enigma variations are rare, but they're not that common. And I'm willing to bet that a large number of the people who are going to be in that audience have never heard it done live.
I think you're probably right about that. I mean, certainly the Vaughan Williams. I mean, I got to say, I myself was not even particularly familiar with the Vaughan Williams until we started talking about this program. And we were going to have Philip Dukes as the viola soloist. And actually, I believe it was Philip who suggested this piece, which I didn't even know existed. And so I went and listened to it and got a score and started looking at it. And I thought, oh, my God, it's amazing. Let's play it. But if it was unfamiliar to me, then I am certain it will be unfamiliar to the vast majority of people in the audience.
And so what are your feelings about having a program with basically works that are not familiar to the audience?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I think people, like, if you're a classical music fan, you certainly have heard of, if not actually heard, the Enigma Variations, which is, a fairly standard piece. But as far as I'm concerned, if I can expose people to great music that they've never heard before, I'm all for it. And I mean, I certainly wouldn't program any of it if I didn't believe in the strength and quality of the music itself, whether it is well-known or not. And the Vaughan Williams, I mean, I'm a Vaughan Williams true believer. I love his music. This was a new one for me, but it has the same qualities that I love from so much of his music. It's a very particular sound that he gets out of the orchestra, particularly from the strings. And it's a very, I mean, this piece is sort of mystical in its conception. It has six movements. Each movement is based on a quote from the Song of Solomon. It features not only the solo viola, but also a wordless chorus, which is a very cool thing to include into the piece, where they sing, of course, but they either sing ah or they sort of hum. And it's an unbelievable effect. I mean, one of the things that's so genius about it, he wrote this piece, as I said, based on these quotes from the Song of Solomon, which he could have easily, I mean, he was using a chorus. He could have just had them sing the words that he was basing the piece on. But he did not. He chose to just leave the quotations as sort of the idea that hangs over it. And he really leaves it to the solo viola to sort of express each particular movement in its own identity. So it's just it's a wonderful work. I mean, I was just studying it 10 minutes before we started talking here. And I can't wait to get down there and do it in Savannah.
And at the very beginning and the very end, too, you have this wonderful duet between the oboe and the viola.
That's
which
right.
Which is sort of it. And it sort of appears now and then as you go through. But a lot of the work that you hear with the viola is with the woodwinds. That's a really nice combination.
It is. And actually, I'm glad that you brought up that particular aspect of the piece, the oboe-viola duet, which, as you mentioned, opens the piece at the very beginning and also closes it. It is a very famous example of bitonality. In other words, the oboe is playing in one key, the viola is playing in a different key at the same time. This piece was written in 1925, so this is not exactly groundbreaking for 1925. I mean, the Rite of Spring was 12 years earlier and, had its own bitonality and a whole lot more besides. But it is one aspect that I love about Vaughan Williams, and one way in which maybe he bridges the gap between Carlos Simon and Edward Elgar.
Thank you.
Elgar, our Enigma Variations, was written in 1899. There's nothing really about it that is ahead of its time or even really at its time for 1899 in terms of the harmonic language, in terms of the use of dissonance, in terms of the orchestration, for instance. I mean, it is brilliant. It is so unique in its own way in terms of these things. The orchestration is so Elgar and so beautifully done, but it is not, groundbreaking, shall we say. We have this theme, the Enigma Variations. We have the Enigma theme, which is its whole own conversation, this idea of the Enigma. And it's followed by 14 variations, but you can sort of trace the theme from variation to variation as he is depicting these various people in his life. So it sort of gives you the opportunity to be a bit of a musical detective if you're hearing it for the first time, hearing how is the theme going to be used in this variation? How is it transformed? Sometimes it's sort of hidden in a certain way. So it's just a really, it's a just a brilliant, brilliant piece.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with conductor Benjamin Manis. As we talked about during the program, we'll be guest conducting the Savannah Philharmonic on Saturday night, March 28th at 7:30 p.m. in a concert entitled Music of Empire, Elgar's Enigma. And so I want to thank you so very much, Ben Manis, for being on the show tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dave. And it's been great talking to you. I can't wait to be in Savannah.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Link. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.